Hey, bro, some of these evolutionists are getting way too comfortable. I really mean that. Sometimes they just don't make any sense. Including Richard Dawkins. Now, since this episode is about Richard Dawkins, I'm going to get into some reasons as to why I think some of these evolutionists don't make any sense by reacting to one of his more recent interviews with Piers Morgan on his show. So, but before we get into that, welcome to the 12F podcast. My name is Greg, your host. And if you're new to this podcast, we're all about discussing complex cultural, political, and even theological based subjects, making them more digestible to the common person, all from a conservative and Christian lens. And I do hope that resonates with you. I don't know if I should change that intro, but we're going to run with it, okay? We're going to run with it. I have this clip to show you guys. It's kind of a long interview between Piers Morgan and Richard Dawkins, but just FYI, I'm not going to be, you know, playing the whole entire, you know, interview between these two. We're just going to be reacting to certain sections in the interview. So let's get right into it.
As you say, a comprehensive dossier on all the world as it moves forward. I get it. But when you go back to the very start, what is there before that? And that, I think I asked you last time, and Professor Meyer brought that up again as being the flaw in your position, which is, what is there before it starts? What is nothing?
This is a question for a physicist, not a biologist, but what I would answer to Professor Meyer is that we need to explain complexity in terms of simplicity. And of course, it's true that I cannot say what was there before the Big Bang. Physicists sometimes tell us that the word for before doesn't even mean anything before the Big Bang. But whatever it was, it
but it has
simple.
To, doesn't it?
You cannot suddenly invoke.
Doesn't it have to? Someone as logical as you are, and I believe you are, you know, you think about this all very logically. A logical mind surely has to appreciate that before the Big Bang, there has to have been something before then. Otherwise, what is nothing?
A physicist will tell you that there, that.
Yeah, but what do you tell me?
Piers is making some good points. Piers is making some good points. And usually I don't really like listening to Piers's interviews because he interrupts a lot. Most people who watch him know that. But he's making some good points. What is nothing? What is that? What is nothing? Because the idea of nothing is nothing at all. Like, meaning nothing doesn't exist because it would be nothing. Does that make any sense? It's kind of mind-blowing when you really think about it. You can't have nothing because then you wouldn't even know what that thing is because it'd be nothing there. So what Piers is getting at, I think, is, what Richard is getting at is you can't say before the Big Bang because there is no such thing as before in the Big Bang, which doesn't make any sense according to Piers and everybody else as well. Because if you have a logical brain, your mind is thinking, well, if there was nothing, how could nothing explode? How is that even possible? It's nothing. It doesn't exist. So how could that cause the Big Bang? Which is why Piers is like, what do you mean you can't say before? Like, what do you mean? Which is why Piers is saying, well, what is nothing? You know, how old is Richard Dawkins? I Googled him before. Let's see. Richard Dawkins is 83 years old. Huh. Interesting. But he doesn't have a lot of time left. He's got to get on the Jesus train really quickly because time is not on your side, bro. Time is not on your side. He's really got to hop on the Jesus bus and soon and fast, because at the end of the day, the moment you're born, you're dying. You're dying. Literally since the day you've been born, you've been dying. Isn't that crazy? Isn't that funny? It's not really funny, no, but it's crazy. And Richard is almost there. Richard's almost there. So, I mean, technically, none of us know when our time is, you know, gonna be, but one can infer Richard, he doesn't have a lot of life left. I mean, look at him in this interview. He's you know what I mean? So, I don't know. Let's keep going.
I'm trying to tell you what a physicist would say, first of all. They would say that you cannot use the word before for the Big Bang. Time began at the Big Bang. There was no before the Big Bang. I know it's contrary to common sense. Physicists don't necessarily deal with common sense.
Well, it makes no sense, does it? And that's what I mean. As you're a logical man, that cannot make sense to you. The idea that you're not even allowed to use the word before the Big Bang, when everything, every part of both of our brains tells us that that's obviously nonsensical, doesn't that make you think again?
We are not physicists. I, like you, am completely baffled by what physicists say to me, which is that you cannot use the word before for before the Big Bang. Time itself began at the Big Bang. Now that is totally counterintuitive. It's counterintuitive to me.
Interesting that he says that. Interesting that he says that. Time began at the Big Bang, so therefore you cannot use before. Well, we know that in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And he also created day, and he created night. And he created the sun to govern the day and the moon to govern the night. Each light source signifies which part of the day it is. So that point in time came into existence because you had day and night. Anytime before the earth was created, time didn't exist. Richard is saying you can't say before because time did not exist before the Big Bang. But as we know, as Christians, we know that time did not exist until God created it. Until God created it. God literally created time. Because God had no reason for time to exist before placing us here on earth. Because God is timeless. God is eternal. So therefore, what is the definition of eternal? There is no beginning and there is no end. So therefore, there is no time. But if you have humans come into play and you're God and you're creating these things, obviously you want time to measure things, you know? Interesting.
To you, it's counterintuitive to Stephen Meyer, but we are not physicists. And you need to talk to a physicist. Talk to a physicist about that. And they will tell you that you cannot use the word before for the Big Bang.
Yeah, but you think that's as preposterous
actually,
as I do.
I do because I'm not a physicist.
You've just written a book as a biologist called The Genetic Book of the Dead, in which you talk about the body and the genome, comprehensive dossiers and so on. So you're prepared to expound a philosophy based on that as a biologist, which I completely respect, and it makes perfect sense. The book makes perfect sense the way that you have written it. But why would you then think that a physicist cannot be contradicted just simply because they're a physicist? I could contradict what you say as a biologist.
No, you really aren't getting it. I'm so sorry. Modern physics is exceedingly mysterious. It really is. I mean, have you tried to read some of the difficult modern physics books? It really is very difficult to understand. And intuition doesn't do it. You cannot use human intuition. Human intuition was built up by evolution over many millions of years to survive on the African plain, hunting and gathering, looking for water holes, looking for mates and so on. Our brains were not built to understand the profundities of the origin of the universe, the end of the universe, the kind of things that physicists deal with. I think it's actually amazing that at least some human brains are capable of dealing with this kind of stuff. My brain isn't, and nor is yours.
No, but that's my point, though.
I wish it were.
Well, yeah, I wish both our brains could. But the truth is, it's because the human brain can't comprehend this, including, I don't think, any physicist. Because the moment they say you can't have before the Big Bang, they lose me completely, just on a common sense perspective. It's that reason that I think there has to be a power that is greater than the human brain. And that gives me succor to my belief in God, and why I think believe people turn to gods of different types, obviously. They turn to that because it is incomprehensible otherwise what has happened here.
There has to be something more difficult to understand than the human brain can understand. I accept that. But it doesn't have to be God. It doesn't have to be the kind of God who, forgives sins and listens to prayers and things like that. There is something very mysterious, and I don't understand it, and you don't understand it, and maybe we never will. I think it's not clear whether physicists understand it. Some do, some don't, but it's obviously going to be very mysterious. But God is not that interesting mystery. God is just a personification of human desires, a father figure, something like that, somebody who looks after you. You said at the beginning that it was comforting for you. A God is somebody who listens to prayers, who forgives sins, who takes action for the benefit of humanity or not, as the case may be. We're not talking about that now. We're talking about deeply, deeply mysterious, profound things, which physics is working on. And it's...
Hold on. Wait a second. He said, God is not that interesting. Let's just say God is real, right? Just roll with me here, Richard Dawkins, right? Let's just say God is real and he created us. Do you see what the human body is made up of? Do you see the human anatomy? We have flesh, but under this flesh is muscle, ligaments, tissue, blood, veins, bone, organs. We have a brain, like an actual brain that if I tell my arm to do something, it just does it instantaneously. Like it just happens. And I can do all of that because of my brain. My brain. Now, if God created everything that I am and everything that we are, you think that is boring? You think that God isn't interesting? You wouldn't want to know? Never mind that, but like, you're an evolutionist, right? Why would you not think God is interesting? Because everything tells us that space is vast. Space is absolutely ginormous. Space is incomprehensible. Is it incomprehensible? I don't know if it's whatever. Why would you think God is boring? I don't understand. I don't get it. Personally. I disagree with you, Richard. Mr. Dawkins, I don't see your point. I don't see how someone wouldn't be interested in God. Doesn't make sense to me, but okay. My boy Richard really thinks he has it all figured out, but he doesn't though, of course. He doesn't. At the end of the day, Richard is a man and that's all he is. He doesn't know everything, no matter how much he studied, no matter how many books he's read. He's not God. And nor does he believe in a God, but that's kind of not the point. The point is God is all knowing. Okay, so whatever you believe and whatever you think you know, when it comes to God, you might as well throw all that out. You might as well put your pride aside, because God will really humble you. He really will. And I think Richard needs a bit of humbling. Yeah.
It's very difficult to understand. And the fact that you don't understand it and I don't understand it is not a good ground, not good grounds for suddenly invoking a supernatural sky daddy.
Oh.
But if our genome, if our genetic background has all the information which has
He's lost me. Sky daddy, though? I'll just keep playing it. Yeah, it's fine. It's fine. I'm not even going to share any remarks about that. It's fine.
Us being what we are today, and that will obviously extrapolate as we go forward, then it does beg the question, doesn't it? Where does the original information come from?
Yes, it does. And as far as a biologist is concerned, we're talking about the original information coming at the origin of life. And that's something which biologists and chemists and physicists can deal with. But you've gone right back to the origin of the universe, to the Big Bang, which is another matter entirely, and which is not really relevant to the biological question of what happens once biology gets started, which is the origin of genetics, actually. It's the origin of the information which is passed from generation to generation, from living creature to living creature. That started maybe 3.8, maybe 4 billion years ago. The universe started more like 13.8 billion years ago, which is a much longer time ago, and which is a totally different question.
How do you know that? So there are many people that say, well, the Earth points to being 13 billion years old or 100 billion years old or this or that, right? How can God create this world in 6 days and the world only be 6,000 to 8,000 years old? How is that possible? Well, if you read the book of Genesis, you know that God created Adam in the beginning, and he placed Adam in the Garden of Eden to work the garden, to work the ground, right? To tend to the garden that God made, right? Now, when he created and he formed Adam, Adam was a man. The Bible does not say that Adam was a baby and God raised him. No, God made Adam as a man. As a man, a fully adult male. Right? Now, Adam was one day old, but he was a man. You see, God made Adam with inbuilt age. Inbuilt age. Adam being a one-day-old person, but a man? Now, my question is, if God can do that, if God can make something or someone with inbuilt age, why can he not do the same thing with this world? You say, well, this world has to point to being 13 billion years old because, you know, it takes this much time for geography to form and this much time for rocks to form and this much time for, you know, the Grand Canyon to have been formed and so on and so forth for plant life to emerge. And bro, God can do all of that and make all of those things with inbuilt age. The Earth points to being 13 billion years old. God can make the Earth in 6 days and rest on the seventh day. And he can do all of that while having the Earth have built-in age. Now, how can God do that? Well, simply because he's God. He can do anything. He can literally do anything. Anything. Now, God can't do... You know, God can't make a square circle. That doesn't even exist. I mean, could God make a square circle and call it something else? I'm sure he could, but it wouldn't be a circle, would it? No, it'd be something else. I don't know. What do I know? I don't know anything. I'm not a biologist and I'm not a physicist, so.
Nothing to do with biology.
But doesn't code have to have a coder?
No, of course it doesn't. Code arises spontaneously at the origin of life, something very, very simple, probably, at the origin of life, which was not genetic, not DNA at least. It would have been some kind of genetic, some kind of coding which would be a self-replicating molecule. Once you get a self-replicating molecule, then you have the possibility of mutation, which is mistaken encoding.
No.
But where's that come from?
You were about to say something?
Yeah, where's it come from?
It comes from a random accident in chemistry at sometime around 3.8 to 4 billion years ago.
And what? I don't want to labour this point, but I'm genuinely fascinated. Genuinely.
Okay.
So it happened 4 billion years ago. There was this chemical thing, whatever. But what was there before the chemical thing?
Oh, well, there was chemistry. There was plenty going on before then, because we've got about 11 billion years, 10 million years to play with there. So there was plenty going on.
Oh, brother. Even I'm not even a physicist or a biologist. But even I know, if you have a ball, right? If you have a soccer ball, and you put it in the middle of a field, and you wait 11 billion years, the soccer ball is still going to be there if no outside force acts upon it. That's physics. That's the laws of nature. It's still going to be the same ball, and it's still going to be sitting in the same place because nothing has acted upon that thing to move it or change it. That's basic science. It's like somehow when it comes to evolution, we just throw science out the window based off of evolutionary theory. And I feel as if, and I said this to my best friend once, and he didn't really take too much of a liking to this because I sounded very definitive about this, but I'm going to be less definitive right now in saying what I'm about to say. I feel as if evolutionary theory takes more faith than believing in God does. Because the way Cliff Connectle, I hope that's how you say his name, Cliff Connectly, the way he described it in one of his videos that I watched on YouTube was, if you have a beginning, you have to have a cause. If you don't have a beginning, you don't have to have a cause. But if you have a beginning, you have to have a cause. Things can't just happen without a cause. There has to be someone causing or something causing the thing to happen, to come into existence. It's kind of like Piers just said, shouldn't code have a coder? Doesn't a painting have a painter? Doesn't a building have a builder? So why would creation not have a creator? Are we not creation? Obviously, Richard doesn't think so. He thinks that we're an accident. So we're just oops. Okay, but how did the oops happen? Is the point. Like, how? He's saying, we don't know because there was no before. Well, if there was no before, then what caused the big Listen. I'm perplexed. I'm perplexed, bro. Because what are you talking about? What are you talking about? What do you mean by that? What do you mean by that, Richard? I'm not being serious right now. This is crazy. You have to have a cause. You have to. That's stupidity. You cannot have a beginning if you don't have a cause. Now, the way Cliff Connectly described it was, if you have a beginning, you have to have a cause, right? Now, you have to have an uncaused cause to cause the universe. What I mean by uncaused cause is God. God always was, always is, always will be, right? So if God is the uncaused cause, meaning he has no beginning. He caused the universe. He caused it by speaking it into existence. Because God is all powerful, he can make things by just speaking. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Who is the Word? Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ is the Word of God revealed in the flesh. Nothing was made without the Word. Nothing. Everything that has come into existence, as far as life is concerned, was caused by the uncaused cause, aka God. You cannot have a beginning without a cause, Richard. It's impossible. It doesn't even make sense. To a logical person with a brain, it doesn't make sense. And I know it doesn't make sense to Richard, because how? Well, I don't know it. I don't know that it doesn't make sense to him. But one can infer that he has many questions, which is why he's diving as deep as he's been diving into this all his life. All right, a couple of quick things. Follow and engage with 12F wherever you get your podcasts. And if you don't mind, please take an extra minute to give 12F a 5-star review, because it really helps the podcast grow. And if you want, you can also follow me on X and engage with me directly on there. I'm trying to be more diligent and more engaging on X. It's really hard to grow on there. So yeah, give me a follow. Like the video if you haven't already. Subscribe and hit the bell icon so you get notifications every time I upload. Seriously, like the video.
What happened 4 billion years ago was a spontaneous accidental arising of a molecule which made copies of itself. That was a very improbable event, admittedly, a very improbable event. But once it happened, then everything about biology was able to take over.
But you're making a number of informed assumptions based on what you believe happened. But you do concede that you don't know what happened before all that, because your brain, like mine, cannot compute that. So do you accept that stuff could have gone on before that, which makes everything you're saying completely wrong?
You're talking about two different kinds of before. You're talking about the origin of the universe, and now we're talking about the origin of life.
Well, I'm just saying, if you go back generally billions of years, none of us were there. Right, everyone's got their view about what may or may not have happened. But do you accept that the way that your brain has computed what is likely to have happened to get us to where we are today, it could be based on a false original pretext?
I accepted that for the origin of the universe, which is another matter. Now we're talking about the origin of life. And again, we don't know how that happened, but there's nothing like so mysterious as the origin of the universe. The origin of life is a tractable problem. It may never be solved, but it's not in the same league as the origin of the universe. Now, the origin of life is something which chemists are working on, and they may solve it in a certain sense. They may find a suitable model, a plausible model, of how a self-replicating molecule came into existence. There's no mystery about there being chemistry before then. There was chemistry before then. There was plenty of organic chemistry going on. Now, somewhere around 4 billion years ago, a molecule arose which had the unusual property, not totally impossible, but unusual property, of making copies of itself. Now, once that happened, then you have the possibility of Darwinian life getting going. And that's something which we understand. And we understand in principle the kind of thing.
But how did it make copies of itself, though? How? Like, what caused it to do that? Like, I don't know, bro.
Could have given rise to that first self-replicating molecule. And it's an active field of research, but it's not a field that is necessarily going to yield results, because it happened a long time ago under conditions that we can't repeat now. But that's not a big mystery like the origin of the universe.
But are they not? Okay, but are they? I hear what you say, but are they not directly connected? In the sense, if you don't understand or know how the universe began or what was there before then can you really fully understand the origin of life? I mean, you can have some clues about what may have ignited life.
Not really. No, they're not really connected, because the origin of the universe is a mystery, but we know that it did originate, and it was going for 10 billion years before life started.
Okay. I'm curious about your position about religion, because you went on Rachel Johnson's LBC programme earlier this year, and you said this.
I do think that we are culturally a Christian country. I call myself a cultural Christian. I'm not a believer. But there's a distinction between being a believing Christian and being a cultural Christian. And so, you know, I love hymns and Christmas carols, and I sort of feel at home in the Christian ethos. I feel that we are a Christian country in that sense.
And many people thought that was a very incongruous thing to say, because many would argue that your influence has been anti-Christianity, in the sense of you don't believe in religion, you don't believe in a God, you will have deterred people who listen to you and believe you from wanting to follow a God, a Christianity. Therefore, it's sort of antithetical to have the two positions. What do you say to that?
I am a cultural Christian who is against Christianity. That's nothing contradictory about that. I'm a cultural Christian in the sense that I know the Bible, I know hymns, I know carols, I like churches, I like cathedrals, I like cathedral choirs, I've sung in that kind of choir. So I am a cultural Christian, but I'm against Christianity, that I'm against the belief system of Christianity, I'm against many other aspects of Christianity. There's nothing contradictory about that, nor is there anything new about my saying I'm a cultural Christian. I've always said I'm a cultural Christian.
Isn't it a bit hypocritical, though, to be, you know, reading the Bible, singing hymns, going along with everything that Christianity represents, but saying you're not a Christian? You don't believe in anything that actually is the tenet behind it.
I'm not going along with it. I'm just saying that a cathedral is a beautiful building. The B minor mass is a beautiful piece of music.
Speaking as a Christian, I mean, look, you like my churches, my cathedrals, the Bible.
I mean, he likes the benefit of Christianity, but he doesn't want to follow Christianity. I mean, it's pretty simple. I mean, Christianity has built the Western world. Like, we've built Western civilization off the back of Christianity and the influence of Christianity. The way we, you know, go about our freedoms, that is all on the back of Christianity. Our God-given freedoms are a big part of our quality of life. I mean, one can infer that, yeah, of course you would love what Christianity brings, because, I mean, when God is involved, everything is awesome. Everything is great. Now, I'm not saying things are great all the time, because there's still definitely turmoil that goes on and that you will face, but things are just a lot better if we do things God's way. Yeah, of course.
You like all this, and at the same time, you've said on the record, mock them, ridicule them, you said at the Reason rally in Washington. Ridicule them in public.
Ridicule their beliefs.
Yes, I'm going to finish the quote.
You said,
don't fall for the convention. We're all too polite to talk about religion. Religion's not off the table. Religion's not off the list. Religion makes specific claims about universe which need to be substantiated and need to be challenged. If necessary, need to be ridiculed with contempt. Now, can you really be a cultural Christian and urge people to mock religions like Christianity at the same time?
Did you say lock?
Mock. M-O-C-K.
Oh, mock. Oh, yes, of course you can. I don't understand your problem. A cultural Christian is simply somebody who's brought up in a Christian culture and therefore is steeped in the music, the art, the architecture, the literature of Christianity. That's what I am.
But my point to you is it all comes from the belief. As a Christian who was raised a Christian, as a Catholic, it's all interwoven. You know, you can't sing hymns in a church.
It is for you, but not for me.
Well, OK, but, you know, if you sing hymns, it's a bit like going to a football match and saying that you're a cultural Arsenal fan and you're going to chant all the chants about all the players and about the club, but you don't actually believe in the concept of a football team. In fact, you hate football and you want it mocked.
I am a cultural Christian because I am steeped in the culture of Christianity. Doesn't mean I'm not against it. I mean, Bertrand Russell, who is one of the most famous atheists who ever lived, was a cultural Christian who was brought up Christian. He brought up in Christian schools. He knew all about Christianity. Mm. It's a very different matter. You don't have to be in favor of it. I mean, when you read a novel, you can identify with the characters, but you don't believe they really existed. You can get emotionally involved in the characters. I can get emotionally involved in the music, the church music of Bach, even the St. Matthew Passion, which is about the tragic death of Jesus. I can get emotionally involved in that, but I don't believe that the teachings of Jesus, I don't believe Jesus was the Son of God. I don't believe he raised from the dead or was born of a virgin, but I appreciate.
Interesting. Richard Dawkins, I can assure you the teachings of Jesus are valid. Jesus was born of a virgin, and Jesus is God. Very much so God and very much alive. And I hope that before your... How old is he again? How old is he? Let me double check this. Before your 84th birthday, I hope Jesus reveals himself to you. Before your 84th birthday, I hope Jesus reveals himself to you. I hope that before your 84th birthday, or before your time ends, or whenever that may be, I hope Jesus reveals himself to you. Because at the end of the day, every knee is going to bow and every tongue is going to confess that Jesus Christ is Lord. At the end of the day, you cannot escape that. No matter how much you can say, oh, not me. No, you will too. You too. You will too. I will. I'll do it voluntarily though, because I'm a follower of Jesus Christ. All the people that say Christ is King, but don't actually live the word out, that don't actually obey the teachings of Jesus, you'll bow too. Christ is King. Yeah, but are you following him though? Jesus said, if you love me, you will obey my commands. Really that simple. So what does that mean if you disobey his commands? Just religiously, you're just disobeying God, right? What does that mean? That means you don't love him. And anyone who does not love God doesn't belong to God. And if you don't belong to God, then one can infer who you belong to. Yeah, one can infer who you belong to, because it's not God. It's not God. So I really sincerely hope that Richard Dawkins gets it together, because at the end of the day, you can enjoy all the luxuries that Christianity brings you living in the Western world all you want to. But one day you'll meet him for yourself. One day I'll meet him for myself, and I'll have to answer for everything that I've ever done or said, anything that I've ever done to someone, or just whatever, anything that I've done, I'm going to have to answer for that. I hope that you can live with that, Mr. Dawkins. Because to stand before God and to not have the blood of Jesus covering your sins is not a situation I want to be in personally. I don't want to be in that situation. I don't even want to fathom that situation. I don't want to have to. Because at the end of the day, God has to punish sin. God has to, because he's just. Because he's just, he has to punish sin. He has no choice. Because he's just, because he's holy, because he's righteous, he has to judge the sin. He has to deal with that. It's kind of like the way Ray Comfort goes through his stuff on YouTube. At the end of the day, if you murder someone, or at the end of the day, if you unalive someone, even if you stand before the judge and say, "Judge, I'm sorry for what I did. I'll never do it again. Forgive me." The judge is going to be like, "Bro, you unalive somebody. You have to pay for that. You're going to prison." My stomach is growling. My stomach, hey, don't worry about that. Someone has to pay for that. Someone has to pay for that. You're going to jail. You're going to prison. Doesn't matter if you're sorry. I'm glad you are, but you still have to pay for it. God is the same way, if not more so. You lied. You stole. You fornicated. You committed adultery. You committed idolatry. Right? You disobeyed your parents. You used my name in vain. You have to pay for that. Now, if you had the blood of Jesus to cover your sins, you're good, right? As long as you repented and you actually turned away from those things, you're good. Good to go. But if not, you know, so... God bless Richard Dawkins. I hope he gets it together. Thanks for listening in on this podcast episode. I know this one was kind of different. I'm going to start doing more podcast episodes like this because it's a lot simpler to edit. And honestly, it's kind of more fun than just doing sit down podcasts. But I am going to have a guest next week. So stay tuned for that. I'm not going to say what the topic is, but just stay tuned for next podcast episode. Thank you for watching. See you guys in the next one. Bye.